Welcome, everyone, and thank you for standing by. All participants will be in listen-only mode for the duration of today's call. I would also like to advise you that today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the conference over to Dr. Amy Serta. Thank you. You may begin.
Hi, everyone. Here we are again for the third session of the TRICARE ACP Manual Change webinars. This is the third session of four, and today we'll be primarily focused on the ABA policy, paragraph 8.0. So again, I just want to thank everybody for joining us today. Sorry, Chris, next slide. I just want to thank everybody again for joining us today. My name is Dr. Amy Serta, and I'm a nurse consultant with DHA, specifically the TRICARE health plan within DHA. And I have my amazing coworker here with me, Dr. Chris Bienna. Chris, could you please introduce yourself?
Certainly. Hi, everyone. It's Chris. I'm a clinical psychologist in the Medical Affairs Directorate at the Defense Health Agency. And Amy and I lead this, we're leading to the sessions today, as well as the benefit and oversight at the Defense Health Agency.
Thank you, Chris. So as you can see from the agenda, we have a lot to cover today. Our goal is to start right on time today because there's actually so much to cover. And as you can see, the primary focus is on the ABA benefit. So I'm sure ABA providers will be interested in hearing what we have to say today. Next slide. So again, just with the housekeeping, phone lines and the Adobe Connect are in listen-only mode. Again, questions can be submitted via the ACG email or via the Q&A box in the Adobe Connect platform. Please be respectful of those questions and comments. The webinars are being recorded. You can also download the slides and the PDF. I believe we have all the slides from previous sessions in the downloads box on Adobe Connect as well. And again, we will post the slides and the recordings to the health.mil/autism website following this presentation. And as of today, the previous two slides and recordings are posted if you would like to go back and see them again. Next slide, you're ahead of me. Okay, the ACD manual changes were published on March 23rd, and you can download them from this website that's listed here on the slide. And again, you can download them from the Adobe Downloads box through the Adobe platform. And they're also available at the health.mil/autism website. Next slide. And Chris, over to you.
Great, so we're just gonna dive right in. You can see on the format for the slides that we have the title and then the corresponding paragraphs in the manual. So if you happen to have that alongside you, you can quick reference or use it for a later kind of crosswalk. The plan is to describe the changes. We're not going to spend time talking about the things that that have not changed. We're just going to highlight the things that are new and should be of interest and drawing attention to you guys. So for all providers, the new part about the NPI is that the behavior technicians are required to have the NPI. Previously, the BCBAs and the assistants had them, but now all three levels are required to have them. And what that means is new providers coming on as of July 1st will have to have them as part of the NPI as part of your packet, your application packet. And for the current providers, like those who are right now certified under TRICARE, under the contractors, you have until August 1st to complete that and submit that to your regional contractor. The other note about what's new is a criminal history check. So previously it was just that the corporate service provider or the owner of the company would, or the business or however that's structured, would possess the copy of those criminal checks. Now these are going to be collected by the contractors. The other change under provider requirements is that the corporate service providers and the authorized ADA supervisors will, so those who own a practice, are going to have to re-sign their participation agreements, and that'll be, the date is August 1st for that. And then there's also a new requirement that the contractors are going to execute, which is the provider education training. And the paragraph itself talks about what the examples of what would be in that training. There was a date conflict. We had two different dates, and we're going to fix that. We have a technical update coming. I think we mentioned that last session. But the date for the provider training will begin on January 1st of next year, and that's an annual requirement. The other change is about behavior technicians being certified within the 10 business days. We have had some questions about the other levels. It's the behavior technicians that we want that are the focus of this change. I will note that the authorized ABA supervisor, you're still required to follow all the other requirements and submissions and checks, and so that is a standard outside of the ACD, and I think that is it's important that we retain that thorough background. But the technicians, while, you know, we're still doing a background, but that certification to get those folks in within 10 days to immediately be able to start rendering services. And the next slide. All you.
All right, thanks, Chris. So for ABA referrals, I'm going to point you all to paragraphs 8.61 through 8.6.3. Referrals for ABA services for children over 8 years of age must come from a specialized ASD diagnosing provider, and that goes into effect 10/1/21. Again, I know we've had several questions come in about ASD diagnosing providers, so please just look in the definitions part of the manual for that. Secondly, if a diagnosis is made more than 2 years prior to requesting ABA services, then an updated assessment or evaluation is required. This requirement also begins 10/1/21 and is for new beneficiaries. And lastly, you will start to see beneficiaries aligned to a chronological 2-year timeline. And just to give an example, that would be, say, August 21 to August 23 would be an example of that 2-year timeline. Next slide. So ABA authorizations, again, the paragraphs 8.6.1 to 8.6.3, if you're following along. Please note, you know, that all existing authorizations run through their current authorization period. Requests for authorizations after the 8/1/21 implementation date can incorporate the manual changes such as the CPT codes and the units that we'll go into later on in this presentation. And just, I wanted to bring to your attention that authorizations after that 8/1/21 date may look a little different. So there's the first authorization would be the ABA evaluation or assessment, and it may include units for outcome measures. And the second one will be an authorization for actual ABA treatment services. So I just wanted you to be mindful of that, as that might be a change. And then lastly, we have UM starting on 8/1/21, and utilization management is a contractor requirement. But that is important to you all because clinical necessity reviews will be initiated beginning 8/1/21. And so all treatment plans going forward after that date, we'll have a clinical necessity review prior to issuing the ABA treatment authorization. Okay. So on the next one, we're just going to continue on the authorization. And here, while treatment plan updates may be submitted up to 60 days in advance, I just want to point that effective 8/1/21 treatment plan can be submitted incorporating the ACD revision. So even if a treatment plan is submitted prior to 8/1/21, but it's effective after 8/1/21, it may not be eligible for those new codes. We also wanted to highlight that treatment plans that are submitted late, those authorizations will not be backdated. So you really need to get them in on time. And then as of 8/1/21, all outcome measures must be submitted prior to issuing those subsequent authorizations. So it's critical to get those outcome measures in along with those treatment plans.
All right, so on to outcome measures. So as you all may have seen, that we've made some revisions to the outcome measures. Most notably is the addition of the PSI and the SIPA, but also changed the timelines. So there, as Amy mentioned on the previous slide, they are required at baseline prior to issuing of the treatment authorization. And then the Vineland and the SRS we're going from a 2-year to a 1-year, and for the PDDBI and the parent measure will be at the every 6 months timeline. And just to point out too that the ongoing of the Vineland SRS and PDDBI remain, but the parent stress measures don't start until August 1st. Again, they are to be completed prior to issuing the treatment authorizations. That all outcome measures, all four of them will require prior authorization. So your PDDBI will be automatically issued since that's the one specific to the ABA provider, but the other three are going to be issued by the contractors. However, they've identified their eligible providers to complete those measures. So the next bullet we have, after August 1st, the outcome measures issued to the BCBA you'll be using the code 97151. We're going to talk about T1023 in a few slides here, but T1023 is essentially going away, and so all outcome measures will be reimbursed under one unit of 97151. So your current authorizations, those that you have issued right now, you're going to continue to use T1023 until whenever that authorization expires. And then after August 1st, you'll have the 97151. The other change regarding outcome measures, instead of transposing your scores into your treatment plan, you're going to submit separately the report, the electronic report or the tables that you get from the publisher. And then next slide is about documentation. It was largely reorganized. Many of the same elements are still there. There are a couple additions which I'll talk about, but it's now laid out to read like a treatment plan would look like. So you start with your reason referral and you go all the way down to your signature. That's in 8.7.1. The other notable addition to the treatment plan development is about comorbid conditions. Just a reminder that the autism care demonstration is targeted for ADA services rendered for the specific core symptoms and deficits related to the diagnosis of autism. If there are other conditions that are, other comorbid conditions, generally those are outside of the scope. And then there's documentation requirements about how, if you are going to address parts of them, how that would be. For example, what would be outside of the scope is, treating a behavior analyst or even a, technician on the treatment plan addressing something like anxiety. That is outside of the scope of the Autism Care Demonstration Authority, and so that would go to the respective behavioral health provider. The other cleanup or revision, kind of reorganizing, is of the progress notes. So we've laid that out too, starting with the demographic information all the way through the guidelines of how to complete the contents of the note. I did want to give some examples real quick on the group note. A couple questions came in about how to write the group narrative component. There are two pieces to that. One is what happened in the group session, right? So the group did XYZ activity, and it looked like this, and these interventions were provided. The individual portion of that group note would look like little Susie participated at this level doing this and her success was this, or, you know, something to distinguish that this that the individual participant had in had a role in that session. I go to the next slide.
Okay, so discharge planning. This is paragraph 8.8, and this section replaced the old periodic ABA program review. Discharge planning actually more accurately describes the activity here. So we understand that there may be situations where sudden termination is required. We just want to encourage that you communicate with the contractor and that, you know, discharge plans are in place. We don't want families suddenly dropped for any reason, and there needs to be some kind of plan. And we also just want to remind everybody to please write a summary when a beneficiary leaves your services. And that could be for a number of examples. Discharge could be because they no longer need services. It could be that they're transitioning to, say, another region or with another ABA provider. So just wanted to highlight that here. Next slide. Okay, so ABA quality monitoring and oversight. This is paragraph 8.9. And while these are contractor responsibilities or contractor requirements, we wanted to bring them to your attention. These audits that are done by the contractors, you may run into a situation where records are being requested. So we just want to make sure that you are completing accurate and complete records at the time of documentation. While the Military Health System's electronic health record requires medical records to be completed within 3 days, you know, we recommend that you complete the notes right away while it's fresh in your mind. With the amount of sessions and the number of beneficiaries that an ABA provider could see on any given day or week, documenting immediately is really the best practice. And then the audit of provider certification requirements, just be mindful that things like, you know, CPR, for example, expire. So you just want to make sure those kinds of things are staying up to date. Next slide.
Great, so we're gonna go to the exclusions chapter. There were lots of questions submitted here, so we're gonna try and address the most common ones and the ones that are changes to or additions to the manual change. So again, this is found in paragraph 8.10. As we mentioned at the beginning, that the ACD is authorized to render ABA services for the core symptoms of autism. So if you are considering writing goals for things that are not related to the core symptoms, those are not authorized for reimbursement. Not that they're not important and not that they aren't helpful to the beneficiary and family, but those are not authorized for the ACD. So things like ADLs, we have some examples here of things we've seen previously, like folding laundry and setting the tables. While those are maybe skills that any individual might want to possess or build skills on, those are not core deficits of autism and therefore not eligible for reimbursement. Moving on to the behavior technician in the school setting, and we put in parentheses there any educational setting because there were lots of questions about the various types of academic environments, so public school, private school, parochial school, any of those academic institutions, the behavior technician is going forward will no longer be authorized. And why that is that, again, ABA is designed to, well, ABA is authorized under the ACD, is designed to render those clinically appropriate services. And in the school setting, oftentimes what the behavior technician is doing is not actively rendering their home program or their approved goals. Sometimes they're functioning as a shadow or an aide or a support, and that is not the role of a TRICARE certified ABA provider in the school setting. Moving on to the community, certain community settings, we gave some examples of the sporting events and camps. Again, this is the same kind of concept, is that ABA providers are intended to deliver the, you know, active delivery of ABA, that, that either whether it's discrete trial, the verbal behaviors, or you're modeling, you are those, you know, some examples I could go on. But in those other environments or settings, you're not generally actively delivering those services. You're functioning more as a support or an aid, and that is, again, not clinically delivering care. The last one that I'm going to talk about, and then switch over to Amy, is the non-ABA interventions, and we've listed the several examples here. I apologize for the acronyms. You know, we're running low on space and want to pack the slides with as much information. So cognitive behavior therapy, acceptance and commitment therapy, prolonged exposure, virtual reality. None of those services are authorized for ABA providers to render under the ACD. You may have training and you may be certified in those techniques, but those are not authorized under the ACD. Amy?
Okay, so adversive techniques or restraints, just a reminder that restraints, this is not new to this manual change. We've got a lot of questions in about how restraints are covered or just different questions regarding restraints, and I just want to reiterate that this is not new. Restraints have never been a reimbursable service under the ACD. BT supervision, also not new. We haven't covered BT supervision as a reimbursable service since the last CPT code change. Concurrent billing, again, this is not new, as far as we have different services that can be billed at the same time, but that's only when there's two separate services being performed, one with a beneficiary and one with a family. As far as the ABA services go, I know Chris is going to go into a more detailed slide later. Billing for ABA while at another appointment, essentially an example would be if a beneficiary is going to the dentist, there shouldn't be billing for both the dental appointment and an ABA service. And then again, billing for ABA provided by an agency owned by a family. There's been some questions that have also come in about this, but you shouldn't be billing as a BCBA for services provided to your child, or if you own a company, there shouldn't be billing for services, say if you employ a BCBA for services rendered to your child, because essentially that money would be going back to the owner of the company, which is the parent. Next
all right.
slide, Chris.
Yep. Or as I'm moving to the next slide, I'll round that out to talk about, you know, that's a conflict of interest in that business and then the treatment component. And that's not uncommon, that prohibition is not uncommon in this, the medical community, where there's a prohibition about rendering care and being reimbursed for your own family member. Okay, so the next several slides, we're going to talk about the CPT code revisions. This can be found in 8.11.6, and this is the overview slide. Well, we have subsequent slides that are to the individual CPT code, but you can see there are revisions to the four existing codes. There are additions of, four codes, but three categories, and then the deletion of the T1023 from the ACD. Again, reminding that, Amy mentioned this earlier on the authorization side, but that treatment plan submitted after August 1st, 2021 may include the new provisions. Those treatment plans that expire between now and August 1st are not eligible to update these, and that's for a variety of reasons, but most importantly, the contractors are still building their systems and their processes to accept, review, and authorize. So let's move on to the first code.
Okay, so 97151, and this starts at paragraph 811621. And this was an increase from the previous 16 units, now up to 32 units for the initial assessment. And then subsequent authorizations can go up to 24 units now. Again, this 97151 code must be conducted within a 14-day period. After the 8/1/21 date, once the deletion of T1023, the outcome measures will be reimbursed from the code 97151. And just remember that if you're, how do I say this clearly? If you're filing a claim for an authorization that was approved under T1023, you would still use that code. This code involves both direct and indirect activities. So this is the only code that permits billing for those indirect activities, and it's not eligible for rendering via telehealth. Next slide.
Yep. Okay. So 97153. This is found at 811622, and the changes are effective in August. So the revisions are to clarify the up to 32 units per day, up to 160 units per week, and the only other call out here is that 97153 is not eligible for rendering through the telehealth platform. On to the next.
Okay, so we have 97155, and this is 811623. It's authorized for up to 8 units per day. It must be completed at least once per month. And if this doesn't occur, this is new, it would be a 10% claim penalty, which it may result. Team meetings and supervisions are not reimbursable under this code, and this code is not eligible for rendering via telehealth. Chris, I think you're going to go into a little bit more detail on the 5-5 and how to bill for it later, so I'll leave that for then, if that's
great.
Okay for you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, so 97156, 811624. The MUE for that is 8 units per day. The new changes about after the initial 6-month authorization, so for a new beneficiary coming in after their first 6 months in the ACD, we have the provision to allow 5-6 to be rendered via telehealth. The COVID piece is at the end of this slide, so I'll get through all that. I see questions coming and the other ones that were previously submitted. So first 6 months in person, then after that there's the potential or the provision to render the 5-6 virtually. The first session of parent, so of the 97156, the parent or caregiver guidance must be completed within the first 30 days of that treatment authorization. The next bullet is a new component too, that there's a minimum of 6 parent or caregiver engagements over each 6 month authorization period. So at a minimum, that means that the 6 contacts have to be made with the family or the caregiver during that authorization period. And we have the sub-bullet there is about the combination of the two parent codes. So they could be done through group, they could be done the individual session, but 6 contacts with each family. If family engagement is not rendered, then let me rephrase that. If it's not rendered without any sort of justification, right, for whatever reason, you know, parents are deployed or whatnot, then their 2 consecutive non-engagements would lead to some sort of review and ceasing of ABA services. I will say that every child will have an adult or a caregiver responsible for them, so we don't expect this to actually happen, but we definitely have had families over the years where there has been 0 engagement, and that is just not good practice. It's not good engagement with the family, and we do recognize that there are some limitations, but we need to figure out how to overcome those, and we employ you guys to you as the ADA provider to either help us resolve those issues or document why that was not possible. 5-6, the individual parent the parent session is not authorized in the school setting. And then the last one I want to talk about is for this code is the provision of under the COVID exception to policy that will remain until effect until the pandemic period is over. So that'll supersede all of these changes until that time. So if the pandemic period exceeds the into the October 1 date, so let's say August 1. Let me correct, August 1. Let's say if we're in September, October, November, December, and the pandemic period is still in effect, all those provisions will remain. And what that means is that, the day you render a telehealth parent training session, then the other in-person sessions would be ineligible for your reimbursement. I will also say the 5-5 provision, if you're rendering a totally telehealth parent training program, the 5-5 new additions of the one time per month, if you're not going in, it makes sense that you wouldn't be penalized for continuing to remain socially distant. And now, the next slide.
Okay, so CPD code addition 97157. At paragraph 811625, and again, this is effective 8/1/21. So I know Chris just touched on this a little bit, but this was a new code to the ACD, and we were actually really excited to get approval and have this submitted for this manual change. We know a lot of the providers have been asking for these group codes. So this can be used by the ABA supervisor or delegated to the assistant level. This is for the family. Groups must not exceed 8 participants. The beneficiary should not be present, and it's authorized up to 6 units per day. The reimbursement rate would mirror the CPD code 90853, and actually, if you go to health.mil/autism, those rates are posted. It's not to be used for parent psychoeducation or group therapy, and it's not eligible for rendering via telehealth. Next slide.
And now on to the other group code. This is the one for the beneficiary themselves. So similarly to 5-7, a lot of the same parameters, right? Used by the authorized ADA supervisor or the assistant. Groups must not exceed 8 participants. This one, units are authorized up to 6 units per day. The reimbursement rate models the 5-7, like Amy just mentioned, and that will be available, or that is current. You can see it online. It's not effective until August 1. Again, this is not to be used for group psychotherapy, psychoeducation or group psychotherapy, and this one as well is not eligible for rendering over the telehealth platform. And this next one is mine too. So let's talk a little bit about the medical team conference codes here. So this is, I'm going to start with this and end with this because we've had lots of questions and comments about this particular addition. This is not a required code. I'll say that again. We are not requiring every ABA provider to engage in medical team conference. This is just a mechanism by which a group of treating providers can get together and their time be reimbursed. I'm going to say it again. This is not a requirement. This is an option to utilize this code, these codes. So every ABA treatment authorization will be issued one unit of 99366 and one unit of 99368. This can be done either virtually or face-to-face. However, the interaction is scheduled. 99366 is with the patient present, so the providers, and we'll talk about those requirements in a second here. And then 99388 is without the patient present. And I'll go to the next slide. I'm going to say it again. This is not a requirement. It's a mechanism to get reimbursed. So what's remaining on most of what I'm going to describe next is not a requirement set by TRICARE, that these are codes or the descriptions of, you know, who has to participate under what time frame. Those are external to TRICARE. Those are set by the CPT codes themselves. So for reimbursement, so you have to have 3 qualified healthcare professionals from 3 different disciplines or specialties. So the example that we have there is the ABA provider, the primary care manager, and the speech therapist. That would be an example of 3 providers from 3 specialties. No more than 1 provider from the same specialty can be reimbursed. So you might have, you know, the BP and the BCBA providing, but the reimbursement will be for only the BCBA. For reporting the participants who are joining the session, the medical team conference must be present for the entire time. And the other requirement that is set by the code is that those 3 providers must have had some sort of active engagement with that beneficiary within the last 60 days. Again, that is not a TRICARE requirement. That is one that is set by the code. We had a lot of questions come in about why can't there be 2, or if the team doesn't have multiple people or multiple providers, then what? Again, it's not a requirement. It's a mechanism by which one can collaborate with other treating providers. There is an ASN, so after after October 1st, when an ASN is assigned, they will also be required to be present.
So for T1023, just note that this CPT code will be deleted for future authorizations after August 1st. And so 97151 will be, if the ABA provider does the outcomes, the 97151 code is the code that will be used. Current authorizations run through their duration, and then again, you know, for subsequent authorizations after 8/1/21, you'll no longer see that T1023 issued. Next slide.
Great. So we're now on to a matrix. It's just a visual of how these different codes can be rendered at the same time. So I'm just going to give a couple of examples, but you can see on this table where they are permitted and not permitted. So the few in particular that I want to call out. So 97153 and 97155 are not eligible for rendering at the same time. You have the beneficiary at the center of that, and it is not, and 55 is not to be used for supervision. So that is prohibited. I would give the other example of 5-3 and 5-8. Again, the beneficiary is at the center of this, so you're not eligible to render one-to-one care as well as a group intervention at that time. So that's an example of a prohibition. And then another example of a prohibition would be 5-6 and 5-7. Again, those require the parents to be actively engaged. The 5-6 is the one-to-one, and then the 5-7 is the group. So you can't be doing those two things at the same time. Don't forget, documentation needs to be for all of these documentation. Well, for all codes, it needs the documentation. But especially if you're rendering at the same time in the same, you know, location, the claim line doesn't reflect. You know, like where in the house or where in the clinic that's being done. But your narrative should be detailed enough to account for that. Okay, next slide.
So as we've done in previous presentations, we just wanted to highlight the areas of change here that are pertinent to the webinar today. So as you can see, for July 1, we have the Vineland and the SRS changes to a 1-year cycle. We have the BP requirement for the NPI required. August 1st, we have new CPT codes, the T1023 removal, the MUE changes, and the addition of the PSI or NASIPA. And then if you hop all the way over to January 1st, 2022, this is what Chris mentioned earlier. The ABA provider education begins at that time. And those are the areas that were highlighted today. Next slide. All right, so again, just a reminder to please submit policy questions regarding the manual change to the ACD email box. I know there's been a lot of you have sent in a lot of great questions, and we're trying to answer them, you know, within the presentation, and then, you know, we have some more questions that we're going to answer after today, or not after today, but later today in this presentation. But we will still be putting together a long list of Q&As that we will post after we get through all these presentations. So just be mindful of that. We do really appreciate the questions that are coming in. And please do not send PII or PHI to the ACD mailbox. Next slide. Okay. So, for those of you that can't see this question, I will read it. So, does a school-employed SLP or OT qualify as a QHP? Would they be required to attend the meeting being the medical team conference? I understand from the description that they would not be reimbursed. If they are considered QHPs, would they be required to complete documentation for TRICARE for their participation in the meeting? So the answer would be no, but that the medical team conference participant must be TRICARE authorized to meet the medical team conference requirements. Non-TRICARE authorized SLPs or OTs can participate, but they do not count as one of the three QHPs. And so also those non-QHPs would not need to complete any documentation for the purposes of TRICARE reimbursement because they wouldn't be considered QHPs to be reimbursed in the first place. Second question, are all TRICARE authorized providers aware of this new requirement with ACD to attend the medical team conference and the requirement for documentation? So just a reminder that medical team conference is not a requirement. It's just a mechanism to encourage all treating providers to communicate and a way for them to get reimbursed. Documentation is required for all billable services, so if you do decide to utilize this code, please document. Medical team conference is a code available under the TRICARE benefit. Next slide.
And that is me. So we have three questions here. If the child does not have an ASN, can the CPT code 99366 and 99368 still be billed? Yes. All of the beneficiaries now in the program, I mean, it's not in your authorization, but for the current beneficiaries, when you come up to the next authorization after August 1, you can have those codes. They will be automatically added, but again, remember that you have to meet all those requirements per the CPT's guidance. The next question, when the physician referral for T1023 is no longer required, so after May 1st, will ABA providers still need to obtain authorization? The short answer is yes. Remember, referral and authorization are different. The referral is issued by happens at the diagnosing provider level, and then the authorization is the regional contractors issue to you as the treating provider. So yes, all outcome measures require prior authorization. Like we said earlier, the PDDBI will be automatically issued or added to your 97151. But then the other outcome measures, though, they'll be authorized accordingly. The next question is, how will current authorizations work as the T1023 is removed and the addition of the other codes are and or units? So I think, as Amy mentioned a few slides ago, the current authorizations run through their current expiration. So if you have an end date of, I don't know, September 1st, that authorization will continue to be valid, and you will continue to bill for that T1023. After that, that code will no longer be part of your treatment plan, and therefore you won't. It will deny. So if you submit a claim after your authorization expires for T1023, that is that will not be reimbursed. So just make sure you're using the 97151 going forward. Next slide is mine as well. Are sole providers required to complete 97155 at least one time per month? I am my own supervisor. Actually, both of these questions here are about sole provider practices, and we put them on the same slide, even though they say they're asked a little bit differently, but we wanted to put out there, we wanted to reiterate that 55 is for the purpose of modifying your protocols in between those 97151 appointments and or sessions at the, you know, at the beginning and for the next authorization period. So, yes, every, you know, whether regardless of you're a sole or tiered provider practice, you should be administering 5-5 to account for those updates, those periodic updates that are happening between or during your six-month authorization. I recognize that the reality of what is happening is you're probably rendering your one-to-one session, and then as the supervisor is saying, oh, I need to modify this, or I need to change the goal, or there hasn't been progress, so I need to make some changes, maybe readdress, revise the criteria, whatever. I understand that in practice you're probably doing that simultaneously, but there are two separate codes with two separate purposes, and so you need to account for the protocol modification code, that 97155. Moving on to the next slide.
Okay, so when are the new reimbursement rates available? So just remember that the rates posted in the actual manual, those are the floor rates set by Congress, and then the reimbursement rates update every year, and they're available at the health.mil/autism website. If you go there, you can see not only the May 1st updates that are coming, but you can also see the October 1st. Rates that will be going into effect at that time. Next question, if we receive a referral but have a wait list, how does that affect the 28 days? So in reality, you shouldn't be accepting beneficiaries if you have a wait list that is longer than 28 days. Now, we understand that there may be instances that happens, but please notify your contractor of the wait list. And if you could always perhaps start providing the services to the parents while you hire more staff. That tends to be the biggest thing that we've seen. Again, parents may choose to wait, and that's okay, but it would be good to start those parent services rather than just having them wait. How should ABA practicing providers handle upcoming reauthorizations for continuous services for patients whose expiration dates range from 5-1 through 8-1? So here you would just continue to submit as you typically would. And then after 8-1, you'll submit using the new codes. And you can request using the new units. And I think, Chris, if I could just point to, for the authorizations that are currently in place, if there's things authorized in there, like, say, for the school setting, they can run through their existing authorization period. I just wanted to highlight that.
Great. Before we go to the next slide, I want to answer, go back to some of the questions that have been coming through that we've talked about, and just for points of clarification. Three in particular that I'm going to call out, and Amy, I don't know if you saw any others, but the one about concurrent billing. 5-3 and 5-5 are prohibited right now. So if you are submitting for claims at the same time of 5-3 and 5-5, those one of those two should be denying, and it's usually the one that is the so we're reimbursing the higher rate. I would if you are doing that, just know that either it'll be recouped or it should be denied from the outset. Another question that came in about the codes in particular, someone submitted that they were, that the, sorry, the 97151 code is being reimbursed for 32 units currently. That is not the current authorization, that the max is 16 units and the 32 is an expansion of that. So again, those units after 16 should be denying or should be recouped at this point. But know that those two things in particular regarding CPT codes are not new, and just wanted to point that out for clarification. The other item that I wanted to address is the use of restraints. The use of restraints have been prohibited from day one of ABA services under the benefit, and the ACD in particular has called it out as a prohibition. And the reason why is that in the ABA field, there are no standard practice guidelines, no standard certifications, no standard education and training. There are certain facilities or institutions that may have those capabilities, but those are usually places like a hospital setting or an institutional level provider, IOP, PHP, residential, inpatient, whatever, that are accredited by a nationally recognized accrediting body, such as the Joint Commission or the Commission, I forget what CARF stands for, Commission on the Accreditation, I forget the RNF, I apologize. But those are
residential facilities.
Ah, yes, thank you. I will reiterate that I understand that ABA providers may believe that they can, in fact, do this, but it has been prohibited and will continue to be prohibited. And if that level of care is being recommended, then you need to make a referral for a different type of provider type or a level of care. The other one I wanted to comment on is somebody submitted a question about whether families or caregivers will be notified of these changes. Yes, we are working with the DHA Communications Office about hosting a beneficiary-focused webinar. While we know that some beneficiaries are dialed in today, the one that DHA comms will help us with, and I forget the date in May, and we'll send that, that notification will go out, but we are tailoring a session for beneficiaries and their families. Amy, were there any others that you wanted to call out that came in for clarification?
I think you got all the major ones there. They seem to be coming in groups, and those are the three top ones at this point.
Great. So we'll finish with this, and then I'll scan the additional questions while we let me go back one more. And then, Amy, if you could review those, and then I'll keep scanning.
Okay, sounds good. So upcoming webinars are fourth of four. Series of meetings will be next week, April 21st, at 1300 Eastern Time. That's 1 o'clock Eastern Time. And this will cover other important changes. As always, submit questions in advance. We will address accordingly. We'll also be addressing the questions that have come in through the webinars over these last three sessions that will fit into that webinar. And do not send PII/PHI. I cannot stress that enough. Next slide, Chris. And then if you want to subscribe to the ACD group on the Gov Delivery, this is the link where you can do so. I guess, Chris, I'll turn it back over to you to go over any other burning questions.
Sure. So one question came in, do all BPs need to be RBP certified? Great question. So the manual calls out three certification options for the behavior technician level. They're by three different certifying bodies. So the RBT is not the required, the only required one. There are a couple of additional options. There was a question about who needs to attend the provider education training. That'll be the BCBA level individual. Those are the, every single one, not a representative for a company, not just a billing specialist. It's the providers that are required to attend, and the contractors will communicate how they're going to roll that out, you know, how, when, all the details that they will, how they will proceed. Okay. I think there are a lot of questions that came in. A lot of them are very similar, and like Amy said, we will consolidate them. We will put them out on a Q&A format and post them to the website when all of this is concluded. Amy, were there any other questions that you saw that you wanted to highlight?
No, Chris, I think we're at a good stopping place. We're at 4 minutes to the top of the hour, and we can provide more clarification, you know, through the Q&A.
Great. So we thank everybody for joining. We know this is a lot of information, and a lot of good questions are continuing to come in, so please send them. We think we got the audio piece figured out for the recording of this through Adobe, so if it works out well, then we will share the recording of the PDF, I'm sorry, of the Adobe Connect recording. I'll also post the audio of the recording just in the event that something is a mishap, but we think we finally cracked that code. So, again, thank you, everybody, for participating. We will look forward to seeing you next Wednesday, the 21st at 1300 Eastern. Thanks, everyone.
Yes, thank you. Greatly appreciate it.
That will conclude today's conference, and we thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time. Speakers, please stand by for your post-conference.